Okay, we won't talk about that. One of the reasons I get to speak today is because it's January 26th. Okay. Yeah. Today is Australia Day. Yeah, it's the national holiday of Australia. And seeing as how I'm an Aussie, rah, 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 I get to speak today. So when my daughter told me at 2 o'clock in the morning that I wasn't speaking today, I knew she wasn't right because I knew that I'd been chosen for Australia Day. Anyway, what's Australia Day? On the 13th of May, 1787, British Captain Arthur Phillips set sail from Portsmouth, England, to establish a convict colony in Australia. He sailed with 11 ships, 759 convicts, 191 of those convicts were female, 13 children of convicts, 211 sailors, 46 wives and children of the sailors, and his personal staff of 9. He landed at Botany Bay on the eastern coast of Australia on January 18th, and he didn't find it very suitable. So he travelled up the coast to a little cove, and that cove today, where he got there on the 26th of January, and that little cove turned into the city of Sydney. And Sydney is known because of the Sydney Harbour Bridge, not just the Opera House. And at the end of one side of the Sydney Harbour Bridge are these huge rocks, and that was the cove where they came in and they kept their ships in safety. And so there you go. You just learned something about Australia. What's that got to do with the message? Absolutely nothing. And I am really good about talking about absolutely nothing. You see, I come from Australia, and the amazing thing now is that the nation of Australia is one of the leaders in the financial world, and they are the leaders in some of the great things that God is doing, some of the great leaders in sending out missionaries around the world. And so here I am, a result of those 11 ships and those female convicts. Isn't that great? I'm here today to talk to you about Here I Am. That's a great title for a message. Write that down, Mikey. This message is about hearing the call of God. I was reading through the Bible a few weeks ago, and I noticed the number of times that great men in the Bible actually said, "Here I am." How quickly they responded to an angel, to the voice of the Lord. I mean, let's face it, we would also respond to an angel. But a few of those examples are in Genesis chapter 21. It came to pass after these things that God tested Abram and said to him, "Abram!" And he said, "Here I am." Another one in Genesis chapter 22. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abram, Abram." And he said, "Here I am." Genesis chapter 46. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Exodus chapter 3, verses 3 to 5. So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." 1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 3 to 5. The Lord called Samuel and he answered, "Here I am." Isaiah chapter 6:8, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And then I said, here I am, send me. I would say that most people in this church at some point received a similar call, maybe not so dramatic, but you definitely felt the call of the Lord in your life at some point, or maybe at many points in your life. For Abraham, it was a journey of constantly hearing the voice of the Lord and the instruction of the Lord. Now, I grew up in a Catholic home, went to a Catholic girls' school, and at the end of every semester we had a retreat, and it was always a silent retreat, and we're the only reading material we were given was the life of the saints and martyrs. Now, after being in Catholic schools for 12 years, I came to the conclusion that I knew what a call was. But I also knew that after reading all of those books for all those years, that answering the call of God was nothing short of a sure death or martyrdom. At best, it just could be a life of abject poverty. So I wished my friends well, hoped they heard the call soon, and went on my way. One of the other things I learnt from reading all of those books and watching the sacrificial life of the nuns around me was that in order to follow the call, you had to have a very personal relationship with God, and He really had to be your strength. I decided I didn't particularly have any of those qualities. I went on my way. But one thing I did learn, the meaning of the call. And this is it in brief. What is a call? A calling is God's personal, individual invitation to carry out a unique task for Him. I may not have wanted to hear the call, but I certainly knew what the call was. One of the most important messages we learn from reading the Word of God is the lessons from the lives of the greats that went before us. We learn that the answering the call of God definitely has complications. When we read about Samson, Elijah, David, it's clear that God's calling brings testings, challenges, stress, frustration, and yet all of those things are used by Him to draw us into a closer relationship with Him. When those moments of doubt begin to gnaw away at your confidence in your call, and that's the time you need to move into Him even more. It's very clear that our fathers struggled over and over and over with the call. As the years have passed, I'm now wise enough to conclude that we all don't recognize our call overnight. Some people have a dramatic moment, usually when they come to the Lord for the first time. Others have another dramatic moment when they're filled with the Holy Spirit. Others have a dramatic moment when they reach a crossroads in their life, or they're at a point of crisis. The timing of when does a person get a call is different for everyone. So, To some, he reveals a calling gradually over years. To others, he gives it in an instant. Others simply learn their calling over time by using the gifts that God has given them, by simply moving into that calling. Some have simply a deep sense of fulfillment and happy when they do particular things. It feels natural to them, like breathing. When I think of that, I think how blessed people are that have unique and special gifts, like my daughter Hannah, that's a dancer. She knew from when she was a tiny child that she was going to be a dancer, that she was going to dance and bring joy to many. And I looked at her, and sometimes I look at my other kids, how they struggle with their walk, and I think she's so blessed because she knew what she was going to do, where she was going to go, and how she was going to do it. But it's not always that simple for everyone, is it? No, it's been that simple for all of you. Sometimes we can put God's calling into words. Or it may be as simple as, I feel led to help people. I feel like that's my calling. Jesus said, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. He recognized his calling. Now, there is an example of someone that I wanted to talk to you about. In our the modern day society that you've all known, she's an amazing woman. Her name was Agnes, and she was born in 1910 in Macedonia, in the former Yugoslavia. She was the youngest of three children, and she grew up in a Catholic family, and she joined the local youth group in church, and the priest was very charismatic in their youth group, and soon she realized that she had a calling to become a missionary. And at the age of 17, she decided to become a nun. I totally understand. He must have given her a lot of reading material. At 17, she responded to her first call. That's what she called it, to be a Catholic missionary nun. She joined an Irish order, the Sisters of Loreto, and she went to India. She changed her name to Sister Teresa, and after just 17 years, she was soon one of the most charismatic teachers in a high school called St. Mary's in India, in Calcutta. So by 1944, she was already this dynamic 34-year-old who was running the school, brilliant teacher, everything was falling into place. She was absolutely growing in her calling. And then she caught tuberculosis. She had to leave everything. She was in a diminished physical state. And they decided to send her on the train as far away as Calcutta as they could to a place called Darjeeling. We all know about Darjeeling. That's where the good tea comes from. It was on the train to Darjeeling when she was in her most discouraged, poorest, weakened physical state that she received another call from God. She called it the call within the call. She later said, it was so clear to me. I was to leave what I was doing and to go and work with the poor, and not only to work with them, but to live with them and to journey with them to their deaths. I knew where I belonged. I didn't know how to get there, but I knew he was in control. That woman was Mother Teresa. She started a school in the slums. She learned basic medicine. And she found a little room to rent. And she would pick up the sick and dying from the streets and nurse them till they passed away. Later, students from her school that saw what she was doing were so inspired, they joined her in the work. Later, the mayor of Calcutta was so touched by her dedication, he gave her facilities free of charge to bring the dying to die. Out of that diminished, wasted state grew one of the greatest ministries that Christianity has seen in the 20th century. She ministered to the poorest of the poor, to the dying, and by her death she had established 450 centers for the dying and had over 12,000 workers join the Sisters of Charity and follow the call. What a dynamic result of simply listening. So what is your calling? Maybe you're here because of a calling. Maybe you're stuck right now. Maybe you don't know what the next step is. Maybe your calling's even been robbed from you. Time, circumstance, finance. Maybe something has happened in your life that the calling is just slipping away from your fingertips, and it's hard for you even to remember what God told you to do. Don't give up. It's okay. After all, He gave you the calling. He's in control. This is what it says in Romans chapter 12, verse 6 to 8. We have different gifts according to the grace given us. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it's teaching, let him teach. If it's encouraging, let him encourage. If it's contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it's leadership, let him govern diligently. If it's showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. The body of Christ is diverse. The gifts of God are diverse. And each one of us is unique and special. We all have something to give. This world at this time in history. And that's exciting. So how do we get there when we've lost our way? How do we get back on track when this call is slipping away from our fingers? We go back to basics and we do what Jeremiah had to do. Jeremiah 29, verse 13. And you will seek me and you will find me when you search for me with all of your heart. It's about going back to basics. Lord, I need to get back on track. I need to know what it is I'm meant to do. It's all about simply humbling yourself and going to Him. There's a beautiful example of someone in the Bible walking into his calling at the most unusual moment. That moment was called donkey duty. Maybe you're on donkey duty right now. Let's look at that particular person, King Saul, the first king of Israel. The account of the calling of Israel's first king begins in 1 Samuel chapter 9. If you just turn to 1 Samuel chapter 9. Verses 1 and 2. Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zorah, the son of whoever, and the son of Appiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. He had a son whose name was Saul, a choice young man and goodly, and there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he from his shoulders and upwards. He was the higher than any of the people. Verse 3, and the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul his son, take now one of the servants with thee and arise, go seek the asses, or the donkeys. Saul's father sent him to recover lost donkeys. Not exactly a great commission for someone that was tall, dark, and handsome. It says here, he was tall, he stood above everybody else, and he was very goodly. He was a looker. And his father was sending him out to look for donkeys. Now that could seriously wound your pride. But while he was out doing his father's bidding and looking for donkeys, the Lord intervened in Saul's life in an amazing way. In the mundane, low act of simply going out and looking for donkeys, something extraordinary happened in his life. That means that God uses ordinary people. He calls them in the midst of ordinary duties that are going on in their life. It was during the non-glamorous task of donkey duty that God invaded Saul's life and set him on a different path. He was so insecure about his stature and his place that even when he was approached by Samuel and told about his calling to become the first king of Israel, Saul said, wait a minute, I think you got the wrong man. Maybe you don't know I come from the smallest tribe and I come from a really insignificant family. And Samuel said, yes, I know that. And God was saying, yes, I know that. And maybe you're feeling the same way about yourself today. How can God use me? How can God send me? But you know what? When God decides to do something, all he needs is your cooperation. Don't become discouraged if you're in the midst of what you consider to be donkey duty, where seemingly nothing is going on, despite the fact that you responded to God's call, you came to Israel, you gave up everything, you left your families, you sold all you had, and now you're here, and you can't hear him, you can't see him, and you don't see the results. Remember, that's the time that you do what Jeremiah did. You seek him with all of your heart for the next step. Don't give up. Let's read a little more from 1 Samuel. Saul was ready to give up. Verses 5 and 6. And when they had come to the land of Zup, that almost sounds like the Wizard of Oz, doesn't it? And when they came to the land of Zup, Saul said to his servant that was with him, come, let us return, lest my father leave caring for the asses and take thought for us. And he said to him, behold, There is in this city a man of God. He's an honorable man, and all that he says comes to pass. Now let us go hither. Peradventure he can show us our way that we should go. Saul was ready to give up. He was ready to forget about the donkeys and just go home. It was then that the servant that was with him stepped into his call. And he took the position that he'd been waiting for years, his moment to shine. And he spoke to his master with authority and said, "Well, you don't need to give up. There's a man of God. We can go to him. He'll tell us where the donkeys are." And then Saul said, "Well, okay, but we can't go see the man of God because we don't have anything to give him. We don't have a gift. He's not going to tell us anything if we don't give him something." And the servant says to Saul, "Behold, verse 8, I have here at hand the fourth part of a shekel of silver that I will give to the man of God to tell us our way." The servant didn't respond once. The servant responded twice and brought Saul into God's divine plan for his life. Are you the servant, or are you Saul? What is your part in God's big plan for the call? Are you called to be the servant, to speak that word in season? Or are you called to be the Mother Teresa and to lead many in a ministry? Don't give up because things aren't falling into place right now for you. It's only human to get discouraged when you don't see things happening. In fact, our biggest temptation is to make things happen for God instead of with God. You see, if we make things happen for God, it doesn't bear fruit. But if we make things happen with God, there's amazing fruit. When you feel like you've lost sight of your calling, you're overcome by setbacks, you feel like quitting, take a step back, recommit your ways to the Lord. Go to someone you consider godly. Obviously, the servant, he had a testimony of stability about him. Saul knew he could trust this servant. There was something about him when his father said, "Go and choose a servant to go with you." He chose that servant. And that servant proved to be the right man at the right moment. Choose people to surround you that are godly, of godly character, that can speak into your life, that can bring forth those things that are hidden within you and draw them out, that can encourage you, that can speak life to your bones. Surround yourself with people like that. Go to someone you consider godly and ask them to pray with you for direction. Don't cut yourself off from the body just because you can't feel God. You don't see the results. Everything is at a standstill. And most of all, don't feel sorry for yourself. Saul recognized his servant as being God-fearing and wise. He recognized it so much that when the servant gave him advice, Saul actually complimented him and said, "Well said." And then Saul said to his servant, "Well said! Come, let us go." So they went unto the city where the man of God was. A word in season encouraged the heart of Saul, and all of a sudden he turned into this bold, brave leader, and he said to the servant, "Let's go find the man of God." God moves ahead of us. He prepares the way. When he calls us, he's already put things into place for us, and we simply need to trust him. Wait, trust, and stay firmly on the ground, surrounding your peace, surrounding yourself with godly counsel. In Samuel 9:15, "Now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came, saying, 'Tomorrow about this time I will send you a man out of the land of Benjamin, and you will anoint him to be captain over my people, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. For I have looked upon my people, because their cry has come unto me.' And when Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said unto him, 'Behold the man whom I spake to thee of, this same shall reign over my people.'" If God has given you a call, he's already put things into place. You don't need to panic. He will help you bring it to something beautiful and fruitful. Something will happen. Samuel was spoken to about Saul the day before anything ever happened, before either one knew each other. In the same way, God is even working now with you and your call or your vision, and you simply need to trust. Perhaps you're waiting on an answer to prayer. It hasn't come. You don't feel like praying anymore. What's the point? Perhaps different things in your life are out of sync. Nothing is working. But who gave you the call? Did you think it up? Or was it birthed of God and the Holy Spirit? Because if it was, then you can trust him. He will prove himself to you. Our job is to walk by faith and trust God to fill in all the other details. When we embrace the call, it's our job to step into it. God's call is not something we can fulfill in our own strength. We have to trust that he will give us everything we need. We later read how that Samuel told Saul, "You know, you're not going to be able to do this in your own strength. But God, you are going to meet some men on the way who will be filled with the Spirit of God, and you will begin to be filled with the Spirit of God, and you will know that you will have the strength to do what you're supposed to do." We later read how Saul was filled with the Spirit of God. He was transformed, and the people who saw him prophesying were amazed and asked each other, "What has happened to the son of Kish? Has he too become one of the prophets of Israel?" When you respond to the call of God, he will give you what you need to walk in it. God called Samuel when he was sleeping. God called Moses when he was herding goats and sheep on the backside of the desert. God called Israel when he was dreaming. God called Abraham when he was getting to retire. God called Saul when he was on donkey duty. And God called Isaiah in a vision. They all recognized his voice. They knew it was a divine meeting. And they all responded in the same way by saying, Here I am. In 2010, I was watching TV in the living room, and I saw the flood of Lebanese refugees crossing the northern border of Israel. 7,500 of them, and no one was there. No Red Cross, no one to greet them. No one had expected this flood of humanity to come pouring into Israel's northern border. I sat there watching all of this on TV, and I said, wow, somebody really needs to do something. And then I watched a little longer, and then I said it a second time. There's no one there. Someone needs to do something. They're all coming in their pajamas. They've got no clothes to wear. What are they doing? They've had to leave everything behind. Somebody needs to do something. And just at that moment, as clear as a bell, I heard the Lord speak to me. And what about you? And it was a knife to my heart. What about you? I didn't have any money. I had a car. I didn't know what to do. So I just used my initiative, my brains, my instincts. I went and knocked on the door of all of my neighbors and I asked them, did you see what's happening on the northern border? And they said, yes, it's terrible. Somebody should do something. Somebody needs to help them. And I said, well, they were your allies for 25 years. What are you going to do for them? And they said, well, we don't know what to do for them. And I said, well, I'm going to drive up there right now tonight and I'm going to go with a car full of toiletries and supplies and you have to give me something right now. So they said, well, I don't have anything. I said, yes, you do. I walked in. I saw their big bags of toilet papers. I saw that they have two dish soaps or two of this and two of that. And I said, why have you got two of everything? You don't need two. You need one. And so I went to all of the apartments in my building. I made everyone feel really bad about their lives. And before long, they were helping me pack up my car and stuff the stuff into my car, lowered all the seats, took the front seat out, and stuffed everything in there. And I drove for 4.5 hours to the northern border, fully expecting to see truckloads of supplies and people there handing out stuff. And I was the only person there. I got out of the car and there was a sea of humanity. And someone came over and said, do you have toilet paper? Do you have toothpaste? Do you have a toothbrush? And I'm like, toothbrush, toilet paper, soap. I got it all. And before you knew it, I'd given it all away. I got in the car. I drove home. I was so excited. I was so on fire. I was a driven woman. The call of God had taken over. I went to the next building and I made them all pack my car. And I went again. And the next day I came back and already the word was out, Christine has lost her mind. She'll be coming to your building. Watch out for her. And people already had stuff right by the door waiting for her. We got it ready. It's here. And after I finished with the buildings around me, I went down to the shopping center and I just walked to the door of the shops and they said, we've got something, we've got some. And there was this one guy, he was like I don't want to say cheap, that's not good, but he was not an easy man to get things out of. And I went into him and I said, Ellie, what have you ever done for anyone, for nothing? And he looked at me. And he walked straight, he owned a clothing store, he walked right over to the rack. He took everything off the rack, put it in a bag, and he says, is this okay? I said, it's fine. I'll be back later. And I went again. That's what the call does to you. It sets you on fire. I didn't have anything, but I had the call. All we need is the call from Him. He sets everything else into place, just as He did for Saul. God is asking each one of us today, if you have a call and you're doubting it, seek Him. If you have a call and you've put it aside, take it out. Seek Him. Our response to Him today should be, here I am, God. Send me. Use me. Direct me. Show me. Humble yourself before the Mighty One of Israel. He won't fail you. It's now 2013, and I'm still working with the Lebanese, and they're still calling me, and I'm still making people feel bad. I want to give you something, a quote from Mother Teresa. At the end of our lives, we will not be judged by how many diplomas we have on the wall, or how much money we made, or how many great things we have done. We will be judged by these words: I was hungry, and you gave me to eat. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was homeless, and you took me in. Hungry, not only for bread, but hungry for love. Naked, not only for clothing, but naked of human dignity and respect. Homeless, not only for want of a room or a place to put your head, but homeless because of rejection. This is Christ, your Lord, waiting in distress. Will you say, here I am? God bless you.